Good evening. It's October 16th, 2022. Coming up on tonight's news, the humanitarian crisis in Iran continues, and many say that women and girls of all ages are the ones leading the fight for freedom.
The segment of the society that has been under pressure more than any other segment, the woman, has exploded, and that's why we see the leadership of women, girls, from, you know, school age up to grandmas leading this revolution for the Iranian people.
And with California's November 8th elections just weeks away, transphobia is showing up on the platforms of some of the local candidates.
It's not just fun and games to dress up and tell a story. There's an agenda behind it.
I think that everyone should let love win, that whether it's kids or adults, that it's no one else's business but their own.
I'm Sharon Sabota, and you're listening to the Weekend Evening News. Reports indicate that at least four people are dead at Iran's Evin prison after a massive fire. However, many believe the number is much higher. There have been more than 20,000 arrests in the last 4 weeks since protests broke out over the murder of Mahsa Amini. During a handful of explosions at Evin prison last night, several prisoners were killed or injured after security forces shot and used tear gas against them. Amnesty International has called for a special session of the UN Human Rights Council to create a UN investigative and accountability mechanism on Iran's government and religious authorities, who they say have committed far too many crimes against the Iranian people. Tonight, Iranian Americans and allies will gather in Union Square for a candlelight vigil to remember Iran's fallen heroes. Hamid Azimi is the communications director with the Iranian American community of Northern California and one of the organizers of tonight's vigil.
This is actually the start of the fourth week of continued uprising in Iran that was ignited by the brutal murder of Mahsa Amini, and that really caused the explosion of 40 years of oppression in Iran on men and women. And young people have been taking to the streets. Their demands have been more and more radicalized toward regime change. The chance that, you know, everybody is hearing in the streets in Iran is a type that calls for removal of the regime, such as death to Khamenei, death to a supreme leader, death to the oppressor, be it the Shah or the leader. And everything is basically pointing to the direction that people of Iran, after 40 years of dictatorship and oppression, are ready for regime change, and they have taken advantage of the spark that the death of Mahsa Amini made. And the Evin prison situation that started yesterday is extremely critical and important, simply because the Evin prison, which was ironically made by the Savak under Shah, and many of the Iranian intellectuals have spent time in it, and there were notorious, you know, tortures happening in that, is now the place that the Ayatollahs have been keeping their lead political prisoners. Ayatollahs have been keeping any, you know, prisoners of conscience, and even some of the foreigners who are basically taken hostage are kept in that prison. And for the regime, for the Iranian people, this prison is pretty much like what the Bastille was to the French during the French Revolution. And everybody for many years has been talking in Iran about the day and the time that the walls of Evin prison will break down and the doors will open up and the political prisoners would come out, pointing at it as a time of change where regime would also crumble.
In terms of the source of the fire that broke out at the infamous prison, Azimi says there's more questions than answers.
The regime has been reporting that there was a fire in one of the shops in the prison, which was immediately refuted by people who were in prison, had been in that prison. They refuted it by pointing out that the time that of the day that the fire happened is the time that nobody is working in any of the shops, and the gunshots that people have been hearing in the street is also refuting the, you know, what the regime is trying to say. So at this point, there is still a lot to be discovered about it.
Azimi says that U.S. and international intervention is critical.
Because of the importance of this prison, it is very critical that United States take action. You know, the international community should send investigative teams in. This case is, you know, something that should be referred to the UN Human Rights Council, especially since everybody knows that there has been ongoing torture in that prison for many, many years.
Azimi says Iranians are counting on the international community to do more than simply condemning the actions of the Iranian leadership.
The right of the people of Iran for self-determination, for self-defense, and for regime change needs to be recognized instead of asking the dictators to be gentle to the people.
Of course, we can't stop from noticing that it seems that a lot of young women and girls are especially impacted by the situation at hand, and they might be among the most vulnerable people right now. What's your take on that situation, the vulnerability of women right now in Iran?
Well, it's not just the vulnerability of the woman, it's the power that they have right now. Fact is that the dictators ruling Iran, before anything, are religious fundamentalists, which are misogynist at their core. So because of this misogyny, the women of Iran have been under more pressure than any other segment of society for the last 40 years. And because they have been under so much pressure, they possess the power, the energy, the potential to erupt and explode against the Ayatollahs more than anybody else. And what we are witnessing is that phenomenon, that the segment of the society that has been under pressure more than any other segment, the woman, has exploded. And that's why we see the leadership of women, girls, from, you know, school age up to grandmas, leading this revolution for the Iranian people.
That's Hamid Azimi speaking about the state of affairs in Iran today. Again, as a reminder, tonight at 6:30, right after this newscast, there will be a demonstration and a candlelight vigil in Union Square in San Francisco. As women have become a symbol of the struggle for freedom in Iran, many of them are shedding and in some cases burning their headscarves as acts of defiance. Nika Shakamari is another teenager who turned up dead in Iran shortly after taking off her headscarf and speaking out at a public forum. Shakamari's aunt spoke about the tragic circumstances of Nika's death just before her 17th birthday.
I was in contact with her until 7 p.m. on September 20th. Her friend said Nika put a story on Instagram to show she had burned her headscarf, and she said to her friend she was running away because security agents were after her. That was the last contact from her. At the morgue, they showed a body. They only allowed her mother and her brother to identify the face. They were not allowed to unzip the cover to see the torso.
That's the voice of the aunt of Nika Shakamari, a 17-year-old who died shortly after taking off her headscarf at a public rally. As we're hearing more and more stories of resistance from Iranian women of all ages, I spoke with Paria, a first-generation Iranian-American who preferred not to use her last name for fear of her own and her family's safety. Paria spoke about what the struggle between the so-called morality police and young women over hijab means in a global context where Islamophobia runs rampantly, and how Americans in the global community can be allies to the people of Iran. Paria says that although her family left Iran in the late 70s, it's taken her parents until recently to be comfortable criticizing the government.
My parents like only got used to talking about like things they didn't like about the government in America, like maybe like 10 years ago. Until before then, they would like whisper or like mouth.
Because what?
It, because they're terrified.
Paria talked about some of the ways in which the so-called morality police in Iran are undermining the global progress that's been made to combat Islamophobia. She says that religion is often weaponized.
Religion is always weaponized, right? It's really a tool that people can use to subjugate women so easily, right? And it's not the hijab. It's the choice. That's all it is. It's the choice. It's the choice that's being taken from you. Whether you have to wear it or you have to not wear it, both of those are not fair. You should be able to do whatever it is that you need to do to make yourself feel empowered in your own skin.
We know on an international scale, we've done a lot of work to just embrace the hijab. People want to wear it. They don't. It's their choice, as
right,
you said.
Yeah.
In Iran, that's not the case.
No, it's not the case.
And so women are protesting.
A lot of things are
burning.
That's right.
In some cases.
They are. They're cutting their hair. They're burning their hijabs. They're taking them off and walking around in the street without, which is literally a threat to their life. I actually don't know if I would be brave enough to do it. I feel like I have too much at stake to risk being shot in the street for the sake of any freedom other than just being alive.
So this is speculative, but why do you think that somebody might risk their life to make a statement like that by taking off their hijab?
I suppose for the same reason people would risk anything for anything, right? It's your freedom.
Can't put a price on freedom.
You literally can't. The main population in Iran are, I think, somewhere between 18 and 35 or something. And I feel like at that age, you just feel indestructible. And you're starting to come into your own. And the things that are important to you are starting to really take over your heart and your brain. I feel like the kids are going to burn it down.
Paria reflected on the difference between freedom in the United States and freedom in Iran.
In America, we have every freedom that we could want, and we're still fighting for more all the time, which is beautiful. But also it really puts things into perspective when you look at other countries, especially right now, like looking at my motherland and seeing where I could be if my parents hadn't left during the revolution.
And your parents left in what year?
79.
79.
When, like, most people left.
And they're still pretty guarded about the way that they talk about the country, even now.
Now they're a lot better. They've, like, trusted that they're not going to be kidnapped in the middle of the night for saying, like, president, for example. You know, that kind of thing. But before, they wouldn't even say the president's name out loud. The president of the United States. Like, when Bush was elected and they were, like, not stoked on his decisions, they would just mouth his name. And I'd be like, Mom, you can talk about it. They talk about him on TV. They make fun of him all the time. It's fine. And she's like, no, it's fine, it's fine.
The condition not to do it.
Absolutely.
Because it could be a life or death
situation. 100% life or death.
Paria says she feels a strong sense of solidarity with the people of Iran.
All of the people who are my age in America are most of them are first generation. So our parents fled during the revolution. Really, I don't know anybody who doesn't speak Farsi fluently. Because you had to, otherwise you couldn't speak to your grandparents. Because, you know, and all of that. All of our parents still have their accents and, you know, are more comfortable speaking their language and, like, all of that. And you feel so connected to the people and the struggle in Iran, and I'm so proud of how badass they are. I've been trying to explain to people for years now that, like, the people are not their government. People are not their government. But the government controls the media. They control the internet. They control everything that comes out of Iran that we can see. So right now, the internet's been shut off for all of Iran. I have friends who have family back in Iran that they haven't spoken to them in weeks. They don't know if they're alive. They don't know if they've been abducted. They don't know if they've been arrested in the streets. They literally don't know anything.
So why is it dangerous when people aren't able to decipher between the people and the government?
Of course, it exacerbates the existing racism that's always built off ignorance. If you hate an entire group of people, obviously there's a lot of information that you're ignoring.
Paria says that one thing that Americans can do to show support to people in Iran is to help amplify their message with social media.
I think for a while, even I wasn't posting anything on social because I was like, what is the point of this? Like, where do I donate? Where do I, like, what can I actually do?
Yeah.
And I think the true, honest answer right now is Listen to your Iranian friends, I suppose. If they're asking you to post and that seems silly because it's so small, just do it. Please. Because that's literally all we have. That is the only platform that we actually have.
Paria says she's concerned about the lack of reporting in American media about the state of affairs in Iran today.
I think we had a lot more faith in our country, which is America. Like, mm-hmm. It sucks. You're so torn, and I know we can't help everybody, but I think we can try to help.
Yeah, because the alternative is that we just give up and throw our hands in the air, and that's not really an option, right?
Well, not for the people who are stuck there, mm-hmm. who, you know, are trying to just live and maybe raise their own families one day. How do you exist in that reality, knowing that, like, what if you have a daughter? It's terrifying.
So right now, is there anything that's giving you hope?
You, I guess. This gives me a little bit of hope.
Amplifying the story a little bit from the perspective of an Iranian-American.
Maybe somebody will hear it and be like, oh, they're humans.
That's the voice of Paria, a first-generation Iranian-American. You're listening to the Weekend Evening News on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, 88.1 FM in Fresno, 97.5 FM, K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. October 11th marked National Coming Out Day, a day first observed in 1988 on the anniversary of the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights to assert the foundational right for people of all gender identities and sexual orientations to come out as their true and authentic selves. This election cycle, LGBTQ+ acceptance is a hot-button topic amongst educators, librarians, friends, family, and allies who are making the case that acknowledgement and acceptance of gender fluidity, expression, and sexual orientation are cornerstones of keeping kids safe. And by those opposing it, who were recently called to action by Lisa Disbro, a District 2 school board candidate who recently rallied against the children's Latinx drag queen story time at the Lafayette Library and Learning Center.
I'm so thankful that I got the chance to see all of you. Having supporting parents is very important for all the children. And I just feel so moved by everything that you all do for showing up, taking interest, bringing your kids, and showing that there's equalness in the world. We're all the same. So thank you for having me.
As Bella Aldama, who identifies as a Latinx drag queen, led a room full of dozens of children and parents in stories and songs, a few dozen protesters gathered outside with opposing messages. One group carried rainbow flags and signs celebrating the acceptance of all identities, and the others carried signs with messages like stop sexualizing and stop grooming kids.
Your sign says let love win.
So I'm Robin Jones. I think that everyone should let love win, that whether it's kids or adults, that it's no one else's business but their own. And I, hearing about the event tonight, I just think kids coming out should have friendly, supportive faces and just be surrounded with positivity. I think there's too much negative elsewhere. They don't need it at an event where they're just getting read to.
My name is Lindsay Dolman, and my sign says, hate has no home here. Long live the drag queens. This is a great optional story event with dramatic characters and a chance for kids to read and celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month and hear a story by someone in their community. And I think you can choose to bring your kids or not.
And what do you think about these signs on this side?
I think that our signs of long live the drag queens, and I love this other
messages about love.
Messages about love that says be who you are. I think those are encouraging and affirming for many people.
Most of those protesting in opposition of the event declined to be interviewed or share their names for fear that the report would be one-sided.
Tell me what your name is and what brought you here today.
Marilyn, just protecting the kids.
How are you protecting the kids?
Well, hopefully, I'm not protecting them right now. I mean, I'm trying to say something to the adults. Yeah.
Drag is for adults, it says.
And I don't like grooming them or telling them about adult kind of things.
Okay.
They're too young.
And Ben, can you just clarify how are they being groomed or what kind of adult things are they being told about?
Aren't they in there with a drag queen?
Okay. And do you want to share your last name?
No.
Doing a story, and I wanted to get your side of the story as well.
Thanks.
Is there anybody willing to speak?
We know how we get written about, so.
Okay, so no, all the
is
way across.
Is this fair? Is this fair to preschoolers to bring them into something.
So I'm not a planner, I'm just a reporter.
Ask me a question, I'm happy to answer it.
Okay, tell me what your name is.
Dorothy Castell.
Okay, tell me just what brought you here.
So what brought me here is that I heard that the library was sponsoring this event for young children and preschoolers. And I thought to myself, what parent is bringing themselves to this event where a drag queen that's all about LGBT agenda, what parent would do that? I'm deeply troubled. But more than that is our library, our community library, who is sponsoring that event. It's inappropriate. If adults are going to engage in that, that is their personal right. That's their freedom. But to put that on children is wrong.
I appreciate you going on the record with your perspective. Sure. So this side said basically the drag queen is showing up as their true self.
Their true self.
They're saying, how does that harm others if they are just showing up the way that feels authentic to them?
Sure. So, you know, it's not just fun and games to dress up and tell a story. There's an agenda behind it. Now, you're putting that agenda on small children. That's just not okay.
I spoke with Bella Aldama at the close of her story and song show as a long line of parents and children waited to get their pictures taken with her.
I think it's very important to be here and show representation for different people that are out there in the world, whether it's, you know, gender expression or gender fluidity. I think, you know, we should all have someone as an example, not to follow, but also just to inspire to be ourselves. You know, I don't think we pick who we are, we just are who we are. And I think it's very important for youth specifically to have that involvement with their parents. And I'm just very happy to see that parents are accepting of their kids, and very happy to be here.
Thank you. Anything you want to say to the haters outside?
I didn't see them yet, but I think, you know, I would try to say be more understanding of different people. We all have different people in our families. And we do need that acceptance to grow in life and be who we are. Usually when there's shame on different things such as, you know, being gender fluid, I think, you know, it really does affect children in a way that they get older. And I think, you know, it's not very beneficial for them because they don't get to experience being themselves when they're not supported at home. I think the most important thing is having that home support or home-based support. And I think that people should think about that first, just because we all have families and children in them.
Robbie Peacock attended the event with his wife and two young children.
Why did you decide to come?
Support. I wanted to be able to show that this community supports members of the LGBTQ community. And it's really important, especially for the kids, just to show them that, you know, everybody might be different on the outside, but really we're all the same people.
A 15-year-old who we'll call Lori because she asked that we not use her last name for fear of backlash from the community and some of her family members, said that even though the event was geared towards younger children, she was relieved to see the library taking a stand for representation.
I really like the event of drag queen actually coming here. I think it's amazing for people to just express themselves and do what they want, however they want. You know what I mean? And I think it's really bad that some people are taking it the wrong way without actually knowing what they're doing.
Got it. And I forgot to ask you, what are your preferred pronouns?
I go by any pronouns.
Lori talked about some of the repercussions she might face if she were to show up as her authentic self in front of her family members.
I have a lot of family members that currently do not agree with me on any of my views or the way I am, so probably get in a lot of trouble.
When you say the way you are in terms of your own identity?
I technically haven't come out as trans, but both my parents are extremely transphobic.
In terms of how Lori does identify, she says it's pretty simple.
I am me.
Justine Parmley is a Lafayette resident. Although the event came to her attention after she saw calls to protest and boycott it, she says she showed up to show her support.
I came here to support kids, learning a diverse viewpoints and just really enjoying story time.
And I see you pulled up something that you found in the community group. What is it?
Yeah, so it is a call to rally to protect our kids. From Lisa Disbrow. She is a candidate for County Board of Education, District 2. She asked that folks bring a sign to message your opposition to adult sexualization of our schools and libraries. Says this is about protecting children from all adult sexualization. So this was a call to action for folks to come out and protest against Drag Queen Story Hour, against our children who may be gay, non-binary, trans, who are here for representation, who are here to enjoy a good story. I heard the story hour was for Latinx Heritage Month. And so this group did come in protest of, you know, kids attending a storytelling event with their parents.
Yeah, there was a lot of talking about this being a sexualizing event. And
which is absolutely ridiculous. It is a person wearing a wig, wearing a dress, reading stories to kids. It's no different than going to a princess story hour.
Meanwhile, like you saw me interviewing somebody earlier, what does it feel like to see like a 15-year-old who's in that identity grappling with kind of accepting themselves and being faced with this kind of opposition in this community?
It just feels like we're going back in time. You know, I feel like there was more acceptance a few years ago and then things are backsliding. It really breaks my heart. She's a kid just trying to be a kid in our community, and to be afraid of being who you are, it goes against everything I would hope that this community values.
The National Library of Medicine says that as many as 82% of trans youth have considered suicide and 40% have attempted it. This is why Allegra Porter, the Youth Services Librarian at Lafayette Library and Learning Center, says it's important to hold events like Drag Queen Storytime, even if such events ruffle feathers.
Well, we had a lot of allies, we had a lot of supporters, which I was just thrilled about, because we were celebrating reading through the glamorous art of drag tonight, and nothing more. It was about representation. It was about introducing kids to someone maybe they haven't met before, and just hoping that the kids who don't see themselves represented at the library see themselves tonight in Bella and her performance.
What do you say to the people who said that they're never coming here again because this event happened?
I hope they change their mind, because we have a lot of great events. And again, the library's for everyone. And I hope they change their mind. I hope they come back. I hope their hearts open, because we're here when they're ready. And we're here for the community.
We're going to keep teaching.
We're going to keep opening our doors up for everyone and making sure that everyone feels represented.
People on all sides of issues like this one are encouraging voters to pay close attention to the platforms of local candidates in California's forthcoming November 8th elections. And a quick announcement before we sign off. Beginning on Friday, October 21st, Theater Lunatico will present Attempts on Her Life. It will show for the next 4 weekends. I'll have an in-depth interview with a member of the cast on the October 30th newscast, at which time we'll also be talking about the state of housing in the Bay Area. That's it for this evening's newscast. I'm Sharon Sabota. I've been your host and producer today, and it's been a pleasure being with you. Good evening.